Hey, greetings, everybody. Welcome to One Degree of Scandalous with the one and only Cato Kaelin.
Stop it. I want to meet Cato. Is he here?
I heard he might show up.
I hope so.
I think he's living in a tent on the sidewalk right outside the studio here by Kayawanga. Right there.
Kayawanga? I always thought it was called Kawenga. Holy cow. You just showed that you're not from L.A. there,
no,
pal.
I did that
It's like
person.
My brother from Milwaukee visits me. He goes, how do you pronounce that road? Is that Sepulveda Vida?
Well, I go, you know, I live off Sepulveda Vida.
That's a cheese.
Actually, that was intentional, so no one comes and finds us, because I don't think the studio door is locked. You know, we don't want people finding me.
I was mentioning the homeless problem is so bad earlier. I was saying that there's a sign on the 10 freeway now. It says, if you lived here, you'd be homeless by now. It's true. I saw that sign, and I was like, wow.
Would anything surprise you at this point? I would not be surprised if that sign was enacted off the 405, the 101, the 110, everywhere.
It's
pretty bad. I live in the South Bay, and I just see it creeping in as I drive. Oh, there's a tent popping up on the beach now? Oh, boy, that's going to be wonderful.
And speaking of the beach, you know, I'm in the valley, and the valley has been 103 degrees today. All week, 103. Thanks, Newsom. We got to turn off all the power. I've been sleeping in the freezer. So you're at the beach. Even the beach is like 90 degrees.
You wouldn't believe it. It's hot. It's like, I mean, look, we're spoiled, right? We think 85, 90 is unmanageable. But it has been really hot here in L.A. If you live in the valley, I mean, that's Phoenix-esque, right? It's about a buck 10 up there. It's been an abnormal heat wave. I love how we're getting the little warnings. Be careful. We might be turning the electricity off.
Yeah.
You know, here's what you need to do in these rolling blackouts. It's coming. You know they're going to do that, too.
It's like we're vacationing on the sun. I love it.
Well, welcome to the show, everybody. I'm Tom Zenner. Of course, Cato's over here. Episode number, I think, 16. We're into our fourth month. Things are rocking. If you get a chance, make sure you download and subscribe right now, wherever you get your podcast, and on our YouTube channel. Because you're going to recognize our guest that we're going to bring here in a few minutes, and this is going to be one hell of a great episode today. Cato and I have been looking forward to this one for a long time.
I keep saying to myself, it gets better and better and better and better, and this one is you're a fan. I'm a fan of this gentleman coming up in a second, and I'm honestly, it's the episodes that I've seen, it's a show that you folks will find out in a second. You watch and you go, geez, I hope this guy doesn't show up at my door. No, he must have these stories that he'll be speaking about. They're going to be amazing.
You know, that's coming up in a few minutes. And then follow us on social media. That's all I can say, because we may have an announcement about a big, big show coming up in the next few days or weeks as well. So stay tuned. We have a big announcement coming up. Okay, I'm lucky I'm here. Do you want to know why?
Why's that?
Okay, so we have a mutual friend. We don't need to say his name, but a very good friend of ours. A good friend of the program, I would say.
Okay.
Friend of the program. He was in Aspen. So I went out there to meet him because we're working on another project. So Sean and I went out there for a couple days to meet up with him. And everything was great. Three nights. Aspen's an amazing town. Okay, but do you want to know what happened on the last night? Have you ever been to Aspen?
Hello, Dumb and Dumber.
I'm
Lloyd Christmas.
Me? You know what disappointed me? I found out they didn't tape that in Aspen. It was in Breckenridge.
Oh, wow.
But I was really bummed. I was looking for those exteriors from Dumb and Dumber. I love that movie. I love it. Okay, so final night, Cato. And Aspen, first time for me to go to Aspen. What an incredible city. I love our town, village, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. Lived up to every expectation. It's beautiful. It's so much fun. The streets are cobblestone. It's a type of city that shuts down early because people are little, you know, it's not young kids going to clubs. People go to dinner, maybe go to a late night cocktail somewhere, and then they're heading home. 12 o'clock, we're leaving, and we're walking back to the hotel. You can walk there. I was drunk like I had been for all 3 days, pretty much, okay? So I will just say that. That is a fact, as I've been reminded multiple times over the last few days. So, Cato, we're walking back, and a block and a half from the hotel, and taking this turn, we turned to the left. Shonda had like high heels on. She was clanking along the cobblestone, which was a good thing, by the way. 5 feet in front of me was a big black bear. A huge black bear on all fours.
Chicago?
This would be an Aspen from the forest. And not looking real pleased, not looking real happy. And I don't do well with any animals.
Right.
Zero. Dogs, I think they're all out to get me. Cats, I'm not good with pets. This was not a pet. So I tried to do what anyone in my position, in your position, we do, and that is take video of this.
Right,
get photos. I was getting screamed at, cursed at, yelled at. We got to get the hell out of here. Our life's in danger. I go, don't worry. I will step between you and the bear, but let me get the damn photo. So the thing was following us. We turned down an alley. Luckily, she goes over a 9-foot fence, which I pushed her over in her leather pants. She got up there and landed in this flower bed so she didn't break her ankle in the heels. Then I went up and over. No photo, but I am 1-for-1 in bear encounters. No death, even though I said the next day, in retrospect, I maybe didn't handle that or give it the intensity that it needed. I was a little lighthearted about it, but
I love it. And the Bears play the 49ers this week. So
I saw a bear. Don't seem that shocked or startled.
I'm from Wisconsin up north. I see bears all the time. You're safe. You made it to the show. I can't wait to see the video, though.
All right. What do you say we get into it? Let's bring in our guest. No more waiting around here. Cato and I have been in talks with Chris for a long time to get him on the show. We're lucky to have him. You're going to recognize him from his days in Dateline and NBC. One of the stars there had a franchise that people still talk about to this day, and he's carrying on in the podcast form. Let's bring in Chris Hansen, the one and only, formerly of NBC Dateline, now with his own podcast and a network that's coming up soon that we're going to talk about as well. But welcome, Chris.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. How you doing?
Chris, fantastic. So good to see you. I don't know how you can keep looking younger. I don't know this.
I was going to say the same about you, Cato.
You and I have got this thing going on. I'm juicing in the morning, not steroids, just juice with the natural thing. But you're in front of the camera, so you look terrific. And where so everybody knows where you're at right now? You look like you're at some studio.
We're actually so I'm in Cleveland right now at Transition Studio in True Blue. True Blue is the new streaming crime network. We're premiering actually on Thanksgiving Day coming up. So it's going to be where all the new Predator investigations are going, all the new investigative documentaries. And I'm very excited about this because all the documentaries I've done over the past couple of years have taken long periods of time to put together. All great. Proud of them all. Very happy where they ended up on Discovery Plus and other places. The Peter Nygaard investigation, the Onision in real life, all that. But we've come up with a way to turn these things around in a much more efficient way without the bureaucracy. You know, if I get contacted by somebody about a Facebook fiend who's preying on women and suddenly they start talking on Twitter and they reach out to me and I see that it's a great story and we collaborate a little bit with law enforcement, I don't have to go through five layers of network bureaucracy. I call Sean Reck of Transition Studio and tell him I need a crew on Thursday to start shooting this. And I get that crew. Mm-hmm. So we've partnered. Sean and I first met when he did the White Boy Rick documentary and interviewed me for that 4 or 5 years ago because I had broken the story as a young reporter in Detroit. And we kept in contact over the years. And he came up with this idea. It's his second streaming network. And it's really the future of my content. I'm thrilled to be a part of it.
Congrats.
So I was going to say, how big of a team do you have then? Because all these stories that go on, it's you, obviously, you have a producer, but how you have other people going, hey, Chris, we got a great story. And how many people are actually working to get this story
put together? Well, we've had dozens of people who are involved, and we're hiring more every day. So, you know, producers I've worked with at Crime Watch Daily, the syndicated show I did for a couple of years, at Dateline, throughout my entire career, I've been blessed with, you know, talented people who've made my, you know, products better and who I've learned from. And so all these people are kind of in the orbit of True Blue. And to partner with somebody who's made films that have always made money, that have always ended up on Netflix or some, you know, really premier platform, in a guy like Sean Reck is a dream come true, you know, at this stage of my career. And so I'm excited. It's a busy time. I mean, I was just in Florida last week, just got back Monday from a 7-day Predator shoot. And, you know, 18 years after we first did the initial Predator investigation, all these guys still show up and virtually every one of them guys talk to me.
Unbelievable. It's a profile.
Like for 30 minutes.
You know, you've been finding these guys for almost two decades. You've created a franchise that's known around the world. You're famous because of it. Unfortunately, it's a disturbing topic. But when you consider what you've done as a journalist, you've saved a lot of lives, helped a lot of people, made a huge difference. You've been involved in this for so long. You see the scum of the earth, the lowest of the low with these people. Has it taken its toll on you at all, having to see this firsthand and tell these stories?
You know, it does sometimes, but I realize, Tom, that what we've done here is create a dialogue and raise awareness like no other project I've ever done. You know, I always tell people, the Predator franchise is maybe 10% of my portfolio. You know, 10 Emmys, all these other awards are for other projects. But, you know, it was Predator that became so iconic and so popular for so many different reasons. And yes, there's a dark element to it, but there's also a humorous element to it. There's this issue of taking people inside the commission of a felony. You know, when my older boys who are now in the business were in high school. They went to high school with kids whose dads did a lot of cool stuff. You know, it wasn't a big deal to have a dad on TV. But when South Park did, you know, a Chris Hansen Predator parody, suddenly I was the coolest dad because,
yeah, you
know,
you can't beat that. Right?
We saw that episode. We saw it before the show with the crew. We were just going, I think Chris must have a great sense of humor. Have a seat. I don't have a seat.
Chris, good luck anybody else in your neighborhood having a South Park episode. The funny
thing about that is they don't tell you. You know, if Simpsons does a Chris Hansen character, they call you. There's a negotiation. You go into the studio. You do your own voice.
Yeah.
You know, you're on Black-ish. You go in and you work with Anthony Anderson. If you're on, you know, 30 Rock, you go in and do what you do there. But South Park doesn't tell you. They just do it.
Yeah.
And so I'm in San Francisco on an unrelated story to Predator, and my agent, one of my agents from William Morris, calls and says, hey, South Park's actually text. He said, South Park's doing you tonight. It's pretty funny. I said, well, I'm in the West Coast. I'll, you know, in 3 hours, I'll watch it. And then there's another text about 22 minutes later. It's taken a dark turn.
Wow. It's funny.
But you know what,
Chris? If you've seen the episode, you know what the dark turn is.
But you know what? You make a very good point, and you mentioned it a few minutes ago. There is a humorous or entertainment value
undeniably
of what you do, of such a disturbing topic.
Right.
And I think it takes a special personality to be able to pull that off, because it could have become farcical. It could have become someone taking themselves too seriously. But you have a way of cutting the tension with that trademark line, have a seat. People are just watching the segment and waiting for it. And that's when the bottom had a drop out of their heart, and all the blood left their veins. Their body temperature probably went down to 40 degrees because they knew what was coming next.
We had a guy in this latest investigation who was online trying to meet a 13, 14-year-old girl. And he had reached out to the girl's mother, according to the scenario, and was trying to figure out a way to do a mother-daughter thing. And it was very odd and very bizarre, very graphic. And he shows up, and I go to interview him. And it's almost like he's excited that it's me who's going to do the interview. He had said in the chat, is this one of those Chris Hansen investigations? And the decoy, you know, laughs it off and said, you know, what's that? And he said, oh, you know, the guy who sets up the stings and blah, blah, blah. And so when I walk in to interview him, he gets this look on his face, and it's like a Silence of the Lambs moment, because he's excited to tell his life story about how he ended up being attracted to children to me. And it was surreal, but it does make for very compelling television, and it does show people the grooming process. I was doing the podcast just before I got on with you guys about a past case, and you read these transcripts, and it's almost like these guys go to school. There's a template they follow in an effort to have a child lower their defenses and to bridge this traditional gap we've had in society between adults and children.
Is that instinctive with these sick people, do you think, or are they actually learning it from somewhere? Do they all just have that same characteristic?
I think it's part instinctive. I think it's a way of breaking down a child's defenses, making, you know, finding the vulnerabilities. I mean, all these kids have a vulnerability, even kids in good homes. They're just at a vulnerable age. So if an adult approaches them and figures out a way to befriend them, to make them feel special, to figure out where they might be lacking in their life and to cater to that need, that's half the battle in this predator world. And remember, when we started these investigations, guys, we merely had decoys in chat rooms on AOL and Yahoo. That was it. Now, the number of social media platforms and online interactive gaming that exists has exploded. And so while there are more predators than ever before, it becomes challenging in these investigations to be in all these different places. And every time I do one of these investigations, it seems there's another platform upon which predators can approach children. And during the pandemic, it exploded.
I was going to say, do the when you catch the predator, obviously, do they ever say to you, they watch your show as sort of a template for them to see? And also, has anybody ever had a different alias? Anybody ever been caught twice, like the same person with a different name? That's been released from, you know, this whole release the bail thing now that's going on. Has anybody ever been caught twice?
Big issue in New York, the release and bail thing. But yes, we've had two occasions where guys have been caught twice. One.
Twice the guys committed the same crime. This is amazing.
Twice. Now we've had guys who committed a similar crime in the past, not in one of our stings, but they've done it in the past, and they show up in our sting. But we had a guy who walked into Riverside, California, a sting house there, and he seemed a little off, not intellectually 100%, and I could see that he had a scar on the side of his head. So in that particular case, we had 51 guys show up in 3 days. So we had a lot of guys to get through that who were much more compelling. So he really didn't have a big role in that particular episode. A month later, the decoys are chatting with the same guy during a sting in Long Beach, California. And we figure out that he says he can't show up on a Friday because he's got a court date. Well, the court date was from the bust in Riverside. And then we find out he served a year. You can't make this up. Find out he served a year in jail for a violent assault. And so he shows up on a Saturday night in Long Beach. I said, well, he's going to make the movie this time.
That's disturbing.
That's just unbelievable. And the sad thing is you're never going to run out of material to do stories. It would be nice if you would. Yeah. But hey, here's a theory that I have. Because watching you back in the day on Dateline, you had these guys kind of like you were a marionette. You were able to like pull their strings and get them to do what you want. It seemed like they were starving to tell their story. Do you think they're so narcissistic, so sick, and so sociopathic that they didn't think what they were doing is a felony? Like, or did they know that they are, you know, the lowest of the low and probably belong in jail?
I think they knew, but I think in the course of setting this up, committing the crime and going to, act out in this way, they justify it. They come up with excuses. You know, okay, this girl's going to be of age at some point. I really wasn't going to do anything. I was going to just go there and help the girl. You know, maybe if she agreed to it and she seemed mature. You know, they have 100 reasons why it's okay. Intellectually, they know they're committing a crime. Intellectually, they know that this could damage a child's life forever. But emotionally, they go through this process where they justify it. And you've got guys who have this predilection towards sex with a boy or a girl, and they wouldn't act on it without the internet. But then they get into this addictive trap and the anonymity and the 24/7 access, and they blur this line between fantasy and reality. And the next thing you know, they're knocking on our door. They're coming in.
Yeah, you know, Chris, I do a lot of Twitter for sports, but when I go through the Twitter feeds, I see with the change of life with woke ideology and everything going woke, and then people promoting gender and sex changes, but also promoting teaching kids sex at age 5, at age 6. Are you ever invited to be the speaker because you know how bad this really is of not teaching it? Are you ever doing public speaking?
Because
I read this and I get sick to my stomach going, this is a child.
I've never been invited, obviously, for reasons we all know, to speak to a group who's in favor of this minor attracted persons maps or whatever they call it, where they try to justify that this is normal, it's a condition. And it's just not. It's a crime.
No,
and there's
exactly
a reason why, you know, we attach an age to consent. And because children, obviously, you know, we all know this, cannot, you know, choose until a certain age. And I do speak in terms of human trafficking issues and child safety issues and things like that. But there is a movement, and it's wrong, it's disgusting, and you can't justify it no matter what anybody says.
Yeah, no, and I meant speaking to the people like against it, because when I
speak to parents and students all the time.
And I
have a whole list of things that people should do to protect their children. Unfortunately, when you talk about a drug problem, there's demand reduction. You know, there's a treatment. And the reality in America today is that there isn't a widely available treatment for guys with this affliction. Mm-hmm. And it's not just one type of thing. It's not like, okay, if you've got lung cancer, you treat it with immunotherapy or radiation. This is a very complicated issue. And there aren't enough people who are studied in it, practicing medicine in this venue. Yeah. It's not a sexy part of medicine. If you go to medical school and you go $200,000 in debt, do you want to treat predators sexual predators in a federal lockup? Or do you want to do plastic surgery on Park Avenue?
Yeah. Right, exactly. Chris, you know? I've probably done about 35 or 40 episodes of Patrick at David's podcast, and I missed you by a week. That was a great episode, Cato. Go back and check it. Because, and we're going to talk to you a little bit about this later, but the tips that you give out for parents and warning signs to look at. But let's go back to the beginning. We had to do a little research on you through a good friend of ours at NBC, Benita Alexander.
Sure.
Dateline producer for 17 years. We had her on the show. Phenomenal guest. An incredible story. Go back and look at the episode on our YouTube channel or listen to it. Through podcast one, because she was a compelling guest. And she said you were the hardest worker. She said you had the best sources. Did you work with her in Detroit as well?
We worked. Yeah, I was in. I grew up in Detroit and went to school at Michigan State. And so I was at Channel 7 and Channel 4. And Benita had worked at Channel 4 on the assignment desk. And we became friends there and then worked together at Dateline, obviously. And just, you know, really one of those people who's just such a top flight producer.
So then the question. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, but when you talk about the situation she found herself in, I mean, somebody that smart, that attractive, that much going for.
Yeah. Well, he's a predator.
Who can be targeted by somebody who's a master con artist.
Right.
Yeah. He is such a disturbing
a different type of
predator.
Yeah, but just.
Yeah. And,
just
and
dangerous.
We've got two or three stories along those lines for True Blue, you know, where smart people are victimized by true stone cold. Yeah. Predators of a different sort.
Mm-hmm.
And
every day.
I remember running into Benita when all this was going on. And I said, how you been? And she said, well, I'm going through this thing. And you know, didn't get into a lot of detail. But I've seen, you know, both documentaries that she was in. My wife and I watched them both. And just shocking that something like that could happen to somebody whose life is that together.
Yeah. You know? So, Cato, she was talking about Chris, how aggressive he was. A great investigative journalist at the local level, and then when you got to NBC. But where does this come from? Nobody thinks about this when you're at Michigan State. I want to catch predators lately. How did the chips fall into place where you got the first chance and it turned into a huge, famous, world-famous franchise?
Well,
for you?
To be honest with you, I was talking to a reporter in Detroit who told me about Perverted Justice, the online watchdog group. And in at that moment, Perverted Justice would, you know, have their decoys go into chat rooms. And if an adult approached a child or somebody posing as a child and brought up the specter of sex, they would post that person's identity on their website. And that was it. And I started to think, well, if we could combine their ability, Perverted Justice's ability to be decoys online with our ability to wire a house with cameras and microphones, it could be compelling. So I pitched the story, not as a series, not as a whole, you know, project on its own, but just as a segment on Dateline. And we did the first one in Bethpage, Long Island. And I remember driving out there in February of 2014. And I'm thinking to myself, what if I've just wasted $50,000 of the network's money? You know, what if nobody shows up? And with that, my producer, Lynn Keller, calls me and says, where the hell are you? Two guys are scheduled to be here in 45 minutes. And in the next 2.5 days at this small house in Bethpage, Long Island, we rented it from a retired NYPD lieutenant, 17 guys showed up, surfaced in the investigation, including a New York City firefighter trying to have sex with a child. And I was just stunned when it was over. And this material was at NBC for a long time, and we knew it was important. We knew it was compelling. We knew, you know, people would be intrigued by it. But the executive producers and the bosses had a little bit of a difficult time getting their arms around it. And how do we promote it? What do we do? And I became frustrated. And I finally said, do you want to know how to promote it? There's a man standing on your back porch, you know, holding himself, planning on having sex with your daughter. And tonight we're going to show you how to stop that from happening. And, you know, a month later, it was on television. And we decided to do it again. Now, we did it the first two times without collaborating directly with law enforcement during the investigation. We just did it. Prosecutions were made later, but by the third time, it became clear that in order to be socially responsible and even to be fulfilling as television producers, we needed to have something happen to these guys. And that's when we collaborated with the Riverside County Sheriff's Department in that investigation. We've worked with law enforcement ever since, and we've had to kind of change the way we do things. To be socially responsible, to make sure that there is a matter of justice. A lot of guys on YouTube who go out and they find somebody who wants to meet a kid and they pounce out from behind a you know, convenience store or, you know, row of bushes, and they scare the bejesus out of this guy and make him run away. And it's, you know, 10 seconds of compelling video. That's not what we do. My job is to get inside this guy's head and to figure out what he's doing, why he's doing it, and how to stop him from doing it again, and take people inside this journey of discovery, which is, you know, my philosophy on all of this, whether it's a murder case or a predator case or a con artist case. Yeah. And bring people inside the commission of a felony and show them how it happens, because they get to see things they wouldn't normally get to see. They get to hear things they wouldn't normally get to hear. And that's my job as a journalist, to, you know, be enterprising. And whatever topic, we take those same techniques that we use in the predator cases and apply them to whatever. We've got a case going now, this woman, Tracy Hutsana, you may have heard of her on the West Coast there, master con woman, just pleaded guilty. She clipped Jumana Kidd and her family for about $3 million, was a personal assistant. I mean, a phenomenal story. Wow. And she opened up restaurants with it. And she scammed other people, and she's gotten away with this. She's a master con artist.
Yeah.
And we're hot on her trail.
I like the fact that you're doing predator stories and other ones, too, that they just aren't child predators. That's good.
Yeah. You know, tons of different things.
So you started in 2014 with Predator, and all the time from the change from 2014 to, let's say, 2018, security-wise, were you ever attacked? Did you have to change from those years?
It was 2004. So 2004 we started, and you know, we had security there. You know, they'd take the knives out of the kitchen and everything. But yeah, we've had to ramp this up because, you know, we had a case in Florida where a guy had been chatting online for a whole week, never showed up, and we understood that he might have been in law enforcement, a small town at the Florida-Alabama border, but you never really know till the guy shows up. And we figure he's just, you know, a lot of these guys chat, they get off on the chat and they don't never show up, although the crime is still committed in many states. But we went back to the hotel. We're all having dinner and a drink, and all of a sudden we figure out he's in the neighborhood. He's called from a payphone and saying that to the decoy that the lights are off in the house, what's up? And so the only thing we could do in that case, the police arrested him. And when they did arrest him, he had a .38 loaded in his pocket. And in his car, he had an assault rifle, a shotgun, another handgun, 800 rounds of ammunition, a chainsaw, duct tape, rope, anchors. I mean, who knows with this guy?
Wow. Right. I think I may remember that one, to be honest with you. Insane.
And so people ask if you've ever dodged a bullet. I think maybe in that case...
Probably,
you know, we could have.
You know, you got to think about it. These guys are capable of anything. Yeah. They're desperate. They're crazy. So,
right.
Yeah.
Today in the news, just today, I don't know if you saw it, because it relates to what we're talking about. A Georgia deputy sheriff was down in Florida for a. Okay, the conference.
So let me tell you this story.
I hope we're on the same thing, right?
We're on the same thing.
Okay,
so we're in Polk County. We're in Polk County, Florida, right? Grady Judd's the sheriff there, who I've known for 40 years when we did a sting operation in 1984 when I was a reporter at Channel 8 in Tampa, right? So that's how far we go back.
Wow.
So the way they do it down there, we were involved in a sting for guys coming for children. And then in a separate location, they had a sting for human trafficking, which in many cases is a, you know, prostitution charge, which is a misdemeanor. What we're doing and primarily interested in is the, you know, the predators going after children, which are felony charges. But in that other sting house, and we're doing a whole story on that, they had a deputy police chief from a town outside of Atlanta who shows up in his department vehicle. He's in Orlando for a polygrapher conference, and he shows up in this sting operation. They had a Disney employee, a couple of teachers. They had guys walk in with no pants. All of that—that's a separate investigation for us that we're doing with Polk County. So that'll be on True Blue as well. But it's stunning. So 120, 130 people showed up in that investigation, and we had eight guys show up for children in the other investigation.
It's like a snapshot. You could do that in almost any city. It's people from every walk of life, every profession. It could be your neighbor. Yeah. You just never know.
Right. And the guy's a deputy.
And again, you could argue that, okay, you know, the predator is coming for children. That's horrible. And we understand they need to be exposed. And the other, well, it's a misdemeanor. It's adults, consenting adults taking part in prostitution. But there's a human trafficking element to that. And it's also eye-opening to see who shows up, as we did firsthand, watching this live stream, I had a crew right in there and was actually, you know, a part of that deal too. So yeah, it's mind-boggling. But yeah, this guy was a deputy police chief.
Incredible. Chris, there's a showbiz element, an entertainment element to what you did at NBC and Dateline, because you did have that catchphrase. And they were viewers were waiting for that line, "Have a seat. I'm Chris Hansen." Did you ever think that got in the way of the investigation? Was it a big deal for your producers and your bosses? You've got to get this in there. This is our hook. We need this on the promo. This drives viewers.
It started just as a matter of getting control of the situation, to be honest with you. The guy walks in, and I don't think, looking back, that I thought it through. It was a spontaneous utterance to try to gain control of a situation that I was in for the first time. You know, your heart's in your throat. And we had it set up at the kitchen counter because that provides a barrier of security. We have it set up so the hidden cameras are focused on that area. And so have a seat right over there. I'm going to need you to have a seat became a catchphrase for sure. It became a phrase that, you know, scared the hell out of many, many men, hundreds of men over the years. And it became a catchphrase for t-shirts and cartoons.
I was just going to say
it was all over the world.
Merchandise.
Yeah. Right there. Yeah.
And by the way, could you do us a promo real quick? I need you to have a seat and tune into One Degree of Scandalous with Cato Kaelin and Tom Zenner.
I'm going to need you guys to have a seat right over there and tune into One Degree of Scandal with Tom and Cato. Go ahead. Have a seat.
Hey, wait a minute. Have a seat.
Hey, you drew a round of laughter here. Well done.
I was going to really just quick, because my buddies, I told them that you're going to have my show. You're going to be on the show. And they were all saying, can you just say something to Chris about, do you want to have a cookie? That was another one, too.
So funny story. We were in, I forget where we were. I think maybe we were in Georgia. And somebody, we had cookies or brownies out. I think they were brownies. And somebody had not covered them overnight. And the first guy walks into the Sting on a, you know, Friday, Saturday morning and goes to take a bite of the brownie and it had become hard and stale. And I think the guy almost broke a tooth. You could hear it because we had the mics right under there and you could hear him bite down on it. And it was painful to listen to as somebody left the brownies out.
Well, my favorite in a perverted way was when you describe the contents of what they bring in either a fanny pack or the pocket, a car keys, a wallet, a squirt gun, and condoms. I mean,
what I didn't know until a few years ago, we were doing a series for my YouTube channel, Have a Seat with Chris Hansen, on a music creator, a metal music creator named Davi Vanity, who was accused of all these inappropriate contacts with underage girls over the years. And it's an investigation we're continuing at True Blue. But Insane Clown Posse, also from Detroit, came out and made a public statement against Davi Vanity. And I thought, well, we should get him on the YouTube show. So I called the agent and they said, the guys would love to appear. And it turns out, you know, again, we have a home in Michigan as well as the apartment in New York. And we're like 20 minutes from the clown compound in Michigan. And they're lovely, sweetheart guys who, you know, figured out a niche. And it may not be everybody's taste in music, but they've got a very loyal following of juggalos. And so I have them on the show. And in the research running up to it, I see that they have a song called To Catch a Predator, which is a take-off on the series. And it's what Insane Clown Posse does. It's their type of music, but it's absolutely genius in terms of, you know, the refrain and the narrative and the hip-hop rap nature to it. And it was just something. But I hadn't realized that I had jumped that. I mean, I knew the shows and the cameo appearances and the cartoons, but I didn't realize that I had made it into an album.
That's pretty funny. When there's got to be some crazy times in airports, walking the streets at restaurants. Are people throwing that line at you all the time? Can I have a seat?
Oh, yeah. I mean, every restaurant we go into, it's you get to the table. I'm going to need you to have a seat right over there.
You have to laugh like you'd never heard it before, right?
Well,
if
you're going to live your life in the public eye, and you're going to do what I do for a living, you have to be open to all of that. And you have to, sure. you know, treat people like it's the first time you ever heard it, because it, those are the people who make or break you.
But
right?
Kato, I like the way, Chris,
if I could tell you how many times I go to golf events or celebrity events or whatever, when someone throws their golf glove down and say, look, Kato, there's a glove.
Yeah.
I know
yeah.
what you mean. It right. happens
you
at every
be,
turn.
You know,
and I
but you have
go,
to be
okay.
gracious. And I think I'm, you know, as a hard ass as I can be during these stories. I mean, in person, you know, that's my personality. I'm gracious. And, yeah. and I do enjoy talking to people, and I get a lot of satisfaction from knowing that I reach people. But this particular franchise is now in its third generation, mm-hmm. right? You know, you've got 70-year-olds who know it. You've got 50-year-olds who know it. And now you've got kids in high school who are catching it on YouTube and other platforms for the first time. All those people are followers of my content who are going to subscribe to True Blue and have an interest in all my content for one reason or another. I'm blessed. You know, that yeah. it's a responsibility, yes, to go out in public and to, mm-hmm. to fly the flag and to be the face of the brand. But, you know, it's part of the gig. If you didn't want that, then you should have worked for the New York Times.
You know, the way you described the phrase, though, and when you think about it, it does give you control of the room. That person is now listening to you.
Well,
he's going to answer
it is
your
all
questions.
About,
and
it
you
is all
them.
About control, because I cannot tell you, Tom, how many times I've had somebody with one foot pointed towards the door who I've managed to coax in and have a seat. And it goes back to being genuinely curious as to what brought them into that situation.
Right.
And there are a number of ways to get somebody to talk to you. And yes, some people do run, but for the vast majority of people and all of the guys we caught, in Florida sat and talked to me. But I'll tell you one funny story about the have a seat thing. We're in Ohio, and one of the guys who comes in works at an Air Force base, and it turns out he was going to be sentenced on another predator charge that Monday, and this is a Saturday or Sunday night, and it turns out that he's a little person. He's a dwarf. And so he walks in to meet a young girl. And he's standing there, and because of his height, he's not in the camera frame. And I say, I'm going to need you to have a seat. Now, he's got to jump to get in this bar stool, right? It's a bit of a trick for him because he's a shorter fellow. So I said, I'm going to need you to have a seat. He goes, no, I'm cool right here. I go, no, I'm going to need you to have a seat. And I had to, you know, really work hard to get him to hop up into that stool, because otherwise he wasn't going to be on camera. I mean, ultimately, the crews come out when I give them the signal. There's something you need to know. I'm Chris Hansen. But we needed the rest of it on camera, because sometimes the most compelling moments come before the cameras come out, because intellectually they know that, you know, the house is wired, but in the moment they just are talking to me. They don't see those other cameras.
Yeah, the raw footage you guys have, the reels you could make of the stuff, because that's hours. It's like like an episode of
Predator
Shark Tank,
bloopers,
right? You watch it; it's a 5-minute episode, but that's 2 hours of negotiations.
Oh yeah,
and going back and forth. And I bet those were
and
some
we're,
long
we're,
days.
We're
going
to do some of that on True Blue too. Mm-hmm. You know, so we'll have some of those uncut episodes, which I think people find compelling.
Waiting for you to say that you had to pick him up and put him on the stool. I was waiting for
it
that
almost
moment.
Came to that.
I was just going to say, it had to it almost came to that.
That's how close it came.
I thought you were going to say, I'm going to need you to have a booster seat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that would have worked too, but he finally got up there. So.
Hey, Chris, are the originals on Peacock? Can people binge on these if they want to?
They really aren't, and I'm not sure why. For many years, they did Predator Raw on MSNBC, many, many years. And the Hansen versus Predator, the one we did in Fairfield, Connecticut, which ended up on Crime Watch Daily, those you can see, I own those, and then they also on the True Crime Daily website. So they're out there. I mean, collectively on YouTube, I think there's a 500 million views just on Predator material.
You know, the depressing thing is, you guys did such an amazing job, and you round up these people on a random day. How many houses are they showing up where no one is there to arrest
them?
Well,
yeah, and you'll never know. We used to try to quantify it, and there was a number at any given time, 50,000 predators are online stalking children. And the real answer is we don't know. I mean, the internet is so ubiquitous and so far-flung. There's no way of actually knowing. We know from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, which takes in government-mandated reports from, you know, all the social media platforms, that during the pandemic, the incidence of inappropriate contact between adults and children and the transmission of inappropriate content skyrocketed like 900%. those things you can quantify. But in terms of who's there lurking about, and then we don't even get into what's going on in the dark net. And, you know, again, who are these people? You talked about the deputy chief who got caught in the human trafficking sting, Cato. We had a guy on our side of the house in the predator sting who was the son of the former assistant chief of Bridgeport, Connecticut. And he's, you know, throwing his mom's name around like it's going to get him out of trouble. And he knew this was a sting all along, and he was just out to, you know, expose that. You forget, sir, that I know the answers to most of the questions before I ask them. Maybe not all of them, but most of them. And you don't know which ones I know and which ones I don't, which is my advantage in these interviews. You know?
You know, you mentioned before, I see you as a like a doctor. You've got a great bedside manner. But is there, and you have to talk to them, and you say it's because you're of the way you can speak to them that you can get them to have a seat. But is there that moment that you're looking eye to eye to this guy and you're just, you're disgusted? You're just like...
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, how can you not be? You know, because I approach this not only... I mean, my kids are older now. My guys are...
I was going to say being a parent.
28, but, you know, in the early days of it, you know, I was not just responsible to the viewers and to my bosses at the network. I'm responsible to the other parents at the same school where my kids attended. I'm responsible to the teachers at that school. I'm responsible to the cops who have to do this without the fanfare and notoriety I get. You know, I mean, these investigations go on around the country all day, every day, thankfully. And so there are a lot of unsung heroes who do this work. I mean, I get a lot of the, look, I've got the pop culture icon status for it. Yep. And I get that. And I think I use it responsibly to do other projects and to, you know, to channel that energy and that notoriety to you know, create content that that people need to see.
You know what I would think is fascinating that you've probably witnessed for a long time is the segment can't show everything. You roll on the dramatic stuff, the walk-in, the confrontation, the backstory. I bet there was a moment for all these guys, though, because they got to try to be tough with you. They're thinking, they're trying to give you the perfect answer. But when it snaps and they realize their life is ruined and it hits them at one moment. Did you see that? I mean, it could be a white-collar executive, a boss, an entrepreneur.
Yeah. It's palpable when that moment happens. And it often happens when they figure out it's me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, while I don't think I've aged in 40 years I've been in this business, I have. So they don't always pick it up right away. But what gets them is the recognition of my voice, which is relatively unique in this business for whatever reason. My wife always jokes that, you know, I can go on shaving with a ball cap into Costco and nobody knows who I am until I open my mouth at the register and everybody's like, oh, you're that guy.
And then people start running. Catches predators. Men start running at Costco. That's Chris Hansen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, people get nervous sometimes. I mean, they don't know what I'm up to.
I mean, you got the voice where you can make millions doing voiceovers, but it's too recognizable, right? Everybody would know it's you unless you do a whole bunch of VOs or something for companies, but you do have that voice, right? That people but everybody knows it now. You're a pop culture icon.
And it's not, you know, it's not the traditional FM, you know, radio voice. It's different. And you know, while news directors early on in my career tried to change it to make it more FM-like, and I understood why, it, you know, served me well over the years by, you know, being a little bit different.
So tell us about, you know, True Blue. You say it's going to premiere on Thanksgiving.
True Blue rolls out Thanksgiving Day.
Perfect, by the way, Chris. Everybody wants to watch things Thanksgiving that whole week. Yeah. They can only have so much turkey. It's the perfect timing for
you. Only two football games. So because it's streaming, you can watch it anytime. So we'll have a website up very soon called watchtrueblue.com. And we'll have our own social media platforms. And I'll be talking about it on Have a Seat with Chris Hansen on YouTube, as well as the podcast Predators I've Caught, which is on all platforms for podcasts. Twitter at Chris Hansen, official Chris Hansen on Instagram. I'm even on TikTok now, though we're still trying to
figure that out. You know, you have to be on Cameo. Are you on Cameo?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, okay. Cameo has proven to be, at least for me, one of the most effective ways to engage with fans. And it has also been a fun way for me to show a sense of humor, to have a little fun with some of this stuff. And it's really been, I don't know how many I've done, but the people seem to like it and people seem happy with it. And but it's It was crazy during the pandemic how many people. Cato, you're on Cameo, right?
Yeah, I'm on Cameo. I was going to say it's been very good. Martin,
the owner.
How much
fun do you have? How much fun do you have doing that?
I just look at one of my videos. You'll see how much fun I have.
Cato, it's a lot of value with Cato.
But you know what happens? And I was talking to the Insane Clown Posse guys about this, who are on it as well. And once in a while, you get something where somebody really wants to hear. They're in a bad position. They've got terminal cancer. They've got something very, very serious in their lives, and they want to hear from you. And I spend hours wrestling with, you know, what do I say to help this person, make them feel better? It's, you know, look, I have the funny part down to a template. But when it's serious like that, you know, I'll set it aside for a day, and I'll lose sleep over these things because somebody really wants solace and comfort that I may or may not have the ability to actually provide, but I need to come up with something.
Right, and then you do it, and then you get a comment from them of how wonderful you made them feel, and it makes it like,
I'm telling you, it is without question the most effective way to engage fans of anything I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It was a genius idea. The timing of it during the pandemic when people were looking for entertainment and looking for a unique gift idea, it was, people kind of, you know, were funny about it, me doing it at first. You know, what is a serious journalist doing on Cameo? I said, look, you know, when we crossed over the Rubicon of you know, button-down white shirt journalism to all the different things we do, that changed. You know, we can do Cameo.
Completely.
We did. I've never looked back. I think it's been a lot of fun.
And it's a positive. It's a very positive.
Yeah, I think it's very positive.
Oh, I love it. It's awesome. You know, I think Saturday Night Live missed a great opportunity. They should have done a skit with you and Keith Morrison at dinner. Could you imagine that dialogue?
Oh, yeah.
You know, the way he talks in his
Bill
inflection.
Hader. Bill, yeah. Bill Hader.
He could have done both of you.
Impersonated us both. He did the Keith Morrison thing, and then he had the Chris Hansen show one night. And the guy who did my security when I was at NBC, Ronnie Knight, also did security for SNL. So I would get tipped, you know, when something was coming. But it was the Chris Hansen show, and they had a band leader, and the guests would walk out, and the producer would give him a bag. And what's in the bag? I don't know. Your producer handed it to me. Let me just take a look. And
we're going to run that clip.
The show, and the cast came out on stage, as they always do, and we're right on the front row of the balcony. And he looks up and he catches my eye, and he goes, you know, he gives me the scared look. I said, no, it was good. You know, it's all fine.
But yeah, it's all good.
I've made SNL several times over the years. It's funny, right, and flattering.
Chris, this has been awesome. I know you got other stuff to do today, and Cato's got a busy day too. Predators I've caught, the podcast, the True Blue coming up. What can you tell everybody to tune in for?
Keep an eye on all my social media, the podcast Predators I've Caught with Chris Hansen, YouTube Have a Seat with Chris Hansen, and True Blue, TRUBLU, coming this fall.
God, you're busy. Best of luck, man.
All will be hits.
All good.
They will all be hits. I am so... It's just phenomenal to meet you. Thank you so much for doing our show.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. It was a pleasure.
Yeah,
appreciate it,
Chris.
With everything.
We'll run into you down the road. Call us when you're in LA.
Absolutely.
We'll get together for sure.
Next week.
Okay. Awesome.
Bye, Chris. Thanks
awesome.
So much.
Thank you so
thanks,
much.
Guys. Take care.
You bet. Right. 1 degree of scandalous with Chris Hansen. Whoa, it's a winner. It's a winner. I was going to show Chris and say, Chris, does this picture look familiar? And show Tom Zenner's face.
He always seemed different looking to me, right?
Yeah. Tom. Yeah.
How's Cameo for you? How often are you doing it?
Cameos, Chris is saying, during COVID, I would be getting at least 4 a week for me, which is a lot. Now it's probably, you know, 1, 2. It really fluctuates.
Probably never
but
know,
I
right?
know during seasons of holidays, like, you know, I'll probably get a few for Halloween. I'll get many for Christmas, and it's fun. And I put a lot of energy into these. I've watched a lot of people do their cameos. I'm going, geez, I'm going to make mine special. I write a complete song.
Really?
Piano. And I
time did. Out. A custom song?
Custom song.
So you just change the lyrics depending on who it is? Is it the same song?
Well, if, for instance, if you ordered something for Shonda, your wife, you would tell me things about her that she loves, and I would make it into a story, into a song story.
Dang, Cato. You got to raise your prices.
Dang, Cato.
You got to raise your prices. Yeah. That's awesome. What else is going on in your life? Everything good?
Well, you know, hearing your Aspen story, I want to hear more about your life. My goodness. I thought I was the guy that traveled a lot. You've been gone every week.
The bear, man, looking right in his eye.
Why did you do a picture, not a video?
Well, because I was getting yelled at by the other bear, my wife.
The video, the video is much easier than the photo because you can run, you can show the effect of the bear. I actually am reacting to it much better now. I was just too excited,
Cato,
to meet Chris.
There was a dangerous, crazy beast next to me, 5 feet away. And there was also a bear.
Oh.
Anyway,
the bear wasn't,
she was yelling at me.
The bear wasn't wearing pumps. Come on.
All right. 1 Degree of Scandalous with Cato Kaelin and Tom Zenner. Make sure you download and subscribe. We're going to keep pumping these numbers up. We got some great shows coming up. This one was fantastic. Thank you to Chris Hansen.
Yeah, it was terrific.
And I will drop that skit from Saturday Night Live in there for sure.
I love it.
I will do that.
Okay. You want a cookie?
All right. You take care. Have a good week, Cato. Thanks to everybody for tuning in.
Bye, everybody. Cato Kaelin, Tom Zenner, we love you. Subscribe, get us on YouTube, get us on Podcast One, get us on Spotify, get us on Apple.
And follow us on social media. We'll see you next week. Thank you.